The sound of creaking timbers of a wooden boat can be somewhat atmospheric, evocative of those long historical sea journeys, perhaps lazy days in a rowboat on a lake. For our series, The Handmaid Tales from Tassie, Claudia Taranto went in search of the people who design and make the boats that make those sounds. And that's everything from a canoe to a tall ship.
Varnished and swabbed timber decks, shiny brass bollards and carefully coiled ropes bring thousands of people to ogle at the Australian Wooden Boat Festival every 2nd February. And there are some beautiful boats on display at the Hobart Docks, including the Thistle.
My name's Greg Cash. This boat's called the Thistle. And I've lived at Arthur River on the west coast of Tasmania, south of Stanley, for probably 16 years now. I've still got a shack there. And this boat was part of the ferry service across the Arthur River. Started in 1944. And if something went wrong with the ferry, or some of the cattle got away or something like that, they used this boat as a backup for the ferry service. So it did a lot of hard years at Arthur River, the Thistle. And in 1970, they built a bridge and the ferry stopped running. So this boat became like a fishing boat for Arthur River, and they used to take fishing trips up the river. But it became largely abandoned after a while. Around 1990, it was in a paddock. And a fellow called Jeff Winspear, a fair way back, one of his relatives actually built the Thistle. He recognised it, renovated it, and I bought it from Jeff Winspear, so that's how I've ended up with it.
And tell me about the boat.
Well, I think, like everyone else, I'm impressed with the fact that it's made of hew and pine. Right from the start, it was built in 1928. There was a lot of hew and pine around in those days, and this boat was actually built at Waratah. Strange place to build boats right in the centre of Tasmania, but supply of hew and pine was quite high at Waratah. From what we can work out, the fellow who built it, his name was Cyril Griffiths. He went to war in 1914, and when he came back, he brought back with him a magazine from America with boat designs. And this was a classic design back then, in 1914. It was used in 1850 as an oyster skiff, an American oyster skiff north of New York, Chesapeake Bay. And he brought back a design from a magazine and built it in Waratah. So now this would be the only hew and pine boat of this design in the world. And anything else like it is in a museum in America. So again, it's quite an incredible story, and it's definitely a working boat. It's been shown no mercy over the years, and yet here it is, tough as nails, and it's ready to go for another 100 years.
And hew and pine is one of the reasons that Tasmania's always been a centre for wooden boat building, because the famous Tassie timber's resistant to those sea creatures that like to eat boats, wooden borer and screwworm. But at this year's festival, there was a focus on North American-designed boats and boat-building crafts. In the workshop, I met Bob, who makes steering wheels.
My name's Bob Fuller, and I'm an American maritime artisan. I live in Plymouth, Massachusetts, and my specialty is building steering wheels, wooden steering wheels. I'm the only one in the U.S. that does this professionally, and this is a skill that I learned from my father and grandfather, and I've been building wheels on my own since 1977. I was 15 years old when I started. My skills are considered to be endangered, in risk of disappearing, so that's why I have the support and the encouragement to teach other people how to do this. Funded by the state of Massachusetts as well as the National Endowment for the Arts.
Which timbers do you use for your wheels?
I'm using a Burmese teak from Southeast Asia, or sapele. And sapele is an African hardwood that's very similar to the properties of Honduras mahogany. But Honduras mahogany is so close to extinction that a lot of harvesting has been shut down. Some of that's because of illegal logging, that these countries just aren't allowing mahogany out of the country anymore. And I also use ebony for the black accents. I look at this as being a piece of marine hardware. And so I'm always aware of the fact that it is going to be used around the ocean, which is very harsh. And I have to take, and I always keep that in my mind, that someone's life depends on what I'm doing here. Even the ocean is not very forgiving. I've built 850 wheels, if not more, and I've never had a wheel fail. And I gotta say that, you know, this is based on how my family taught. You know, my grandfather showed me how to build wheels. I still use his traditions. I have modified it a little bit to be more modern, more accurate, but I'm still putting the wheel together the same way he did, and he never had a wheel fail either. So we're doing something right. All the designs I do for the wheels, they're all on paper, using trigonometry, geometry. And when we were learning back in the 70s, that we weren't using a computer. Everything had to be done by eye, and you know, had to be accurate to the point where basically the thickness of a hair.
Have you seen some boats that you appreciate here at the festival?
Yes. Me being an American, my influence being from New England is largely Herreshoff, who was a large, you know, very prominent designer and builder of boats up to the 40s. But here, you're running into different sea conditions, and you're also working with naval architects that, you know, they're just as much as a master as much as they're designing something to stand up to the water, they're designing art. The hardware on a wood boat can last as many lifetimes as someone wants to take care of it. You can always renew a wood boat versus today, where most boats are built out of, at least in the U.S., most boats are built out of fiberglass. That is, it's different. It's a mass-produced boat, and if it doesn't have the heart or the soul that, or the creativity that goes into a wood boat.
Amongst the sea shanty choirs and the stylish Italian speedboats, I came across a very humble craft.
I'm Reg Emmett from the Rotary Club of Howrah in Hobart. And we've worked on this, restoring this dinghy with the help of prisoners at Riston Jail.
What's the history of this beautiful wooden dinghy?
All we know is that the first record we have from it is 1915, when it was built at Craddock down in the Ewan Valley. We've come across the grandson of this person who had it in 1915, and his father had it and he inherited it and sat on his lawn in disrepair for years until it was given away, and the person he gave it away to donated it to us to do a repair.
And what state was it in when it came to you?
Pretty dilapidated. The keel was all useless, and the prow, the bow of it was pretty rotten, so there was quite a bit of replacement work needed. We've had it out on the Derwent and it rose very well.
How did you work with the prisoners?
We took the boat into their workshop. They have a wood workshop there with a TAFE instructor who was able to help us, and prisoners helped pull out the broken timbers and sand it down and shape up some of the new timbers that went into it. And we only had a small number of prisoners working with us, but they really seemed to gain quite a lot out of it, and some of them hadn't had any woodworking skills before that, so it was a great task, a great job for them to work on.
Some say he's doing the obituary mumble, and some say that he's hanging on the wall. I say yarn's the only thing that keeps this man together. Some say he was never here at all. Well, some say they saw him down in Birmingham, sleeping in a boxcar going by. Now, if you think that you can tell a bigger tale than that, I swear to God you'd have to tell a lie.
One of the craft skills that goes into boat building is wood turning. And who better to show the sailors how to do it than some chair makers, using ancient tools like spring pole lathes and draw horses.
My name's Matt Holden, and I work with Wisdom Through Wood. We are traditional woodworkers, so all of the techniques and tools that we use are pre-industrial. So what we're demonstrating at the moment is making these belay pins, which is how you secure the running rigging on traditional yachts, big boat, the tall ships, they're all rigged in that fashion. We start with a log of pretty green eucalypt, split it into halves and then half again and then half again. Then we go to a side hatchet and refine the shape with the axe. So we're just turning belay pins, and at some stage I'm going to make a peg leg out of that long log there.
A Johnny Depp kind of peg leg.
Yeah, I haven't seen anyone who needs one yet, but I'm keeping my eyes open.
Where would this kind of workmanship have been done?
We really practice as bodgers. Bodgers in the UK went into the forest, coppiced trees and used the material from the coppicing.
What's coppicing?
Cutting down a tree. So in European forests, a lot of the trees regrow from the base of the tree once it's cut down. Over thousands of years of cutting down trees, they've got all these coppiced forests. So you end up with clusters of trunks growing very straight, perfect for this sort of thing. With the straight growth of the tree, you get really straight grain, which is what you're looking for when you're splitting things by hand. So the bodgers would go into the forest, they'd set up their pole lathe and probably a draw horse as well, and turn logs into blanks for Windsor chairs. So they'd do the turnings like the chair at the back there, with all of that. That's a traditional turning with the shapes in that leg. And they'd rack them out to dry in the forest, and at the end of their work season, take them all into the village carpenter or chair maker, and the chair maker would saddle a seat and then assemble the chair with the bodger's legs and spindles.
What do people tell you about the satisfaction of making a chair?
There's something pretty special about making a utilitarian object, I think, because they become a part of your everyday life. And I think people have a really strong desire to connect with doing things with their hands. You know, we've become very familiar and comfortable with a virtual existence. Our communication and the sourcing of our things is somewhat dissociated from our own energy and our own interest. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing just to split open a tree and you see something that's never seen daylight before. The smell and the colour, the touch of all of that, it's pretty magic, really.
The mournful voices of the Boaters, a sea shanty choir, formed especially for the Wooden Boat Festival. It'll be 2 years in Hobart, and in that song, Johnny's being encouraged to leave the boat he's been sailing on, just in case you thought it was about a woman. Claudia Taranto with that report.